I'll tell you that as my career as an academic has grown, I am confronted with how little I know and constantly moving into spaces where I surround myself with people smarter and more experienced than I am. And that's the only place I feel comfortable now as I develop things because of the limitations on what we think we know.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome, folks, to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner.
Howdy, hi.
Howdy, hi.
Perfect.
We are going to be joined today by
Marie Hubley Alcock. She is president of Learning Systems Associates, serves as a national and international education consultant, and focuses on the areas of curriculum, instruction, and assessment design. She has spent the last 25 years working in public and private education as a teacher, administrator, and public advocate. She is the founder of Tomorrow's Education Network, a nonprofit dedicated to promoting student literacy. Marie has been working with schools to improve student motivation and literacy development through digital tools, game design, and questing. Additionally, Marie is the founder and owner of CES Link, a comprehensive education system unifying all school databases to streamline information and improve decision-making and planning for school systems. Marie is co-author of the book, The Quest for Learning, How to Maximize Student Engagement. She is also co-author of the book, Bold Moves for Schools, How We Create Remarkable Learning Environments. Links to these and other books that Marie has written will be available on the Digital to Learn website. Without further ado, please join me in welcoming Marie to the podcast.
Welcome, Marie. Heidi, hi.
Heidi, hi. Thank you so much for having me here. It's fun already. I can't wait.
The first thing we like to do on this podcast is actually jump into those fun questions, the get to know you questions, things about you that people can't learn on LinkedIn or your professional website. So that's where we're going to begin. Brad, you want to kick it off?
Sure. So, Marie, what do you enjoy doing most in your free time?
I suppose my greatest passion is spending time with my family. I have kids and I'm madly in love with my husband. So, you know, that time that we get to spend together is precious. But when I need to focus, like maybe get my own energy back up, I tend to play piano and gardening. I love gardening. Oh, wait a minute. Do I have to actually be good at the things that I say
no,
I do?
No.
Okay. Gardening counts because I'm awful at it, but I keep trying. So I use that as a personal way to persevere. Yeah, for sure. Those.
So when you're playing the piano, what kind of songs do you enjoy playing?
Ooh, well, gosh, I love them all. I have a very eclectic taste. So I started this project where I was learning pieces of music as presents for people in my family. So for example, for my mother, for one of her birthdays, I learned Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. I tried to do all three movements. But for my father, for example, I learned Scott Joplin's Maple Leaf Rag. So those are two wildly different pieces of music. But then like they would come over to my home for dinner and I would play it for them. And that was my gift.
Wow, what a wonderful gift.
Yeah. Very individualized.
Very clever.
Okay, we're switching from piano now to singing. So let's say you're singing in your car, the radio's on. Which performer would be the proudest to do this duet with you?
I'm going to have to ask again, does it matter how well I'm singing?
Never.
I could do a mean Janis Joplin, right? Right? I can do that.
That's great.
But I'm not saying she'd be proud. but there are songs that do move me. The X Ambassadors is a group that I really like right now. Renegades is one of my favorite songs that I would sing, right? So 21 Pilots, I like them. But I'm also a big Enya fan, you know, some of those ones come in and you're just, But again, it is really fortunate no one's in the car with me at these moments. Yeah.
We've all been there.
Yep.
So as you probably know already, we've discovered that Marie is incredibly talented, but we're also guessing that she has some hidden talents that she doesn't show off very often. So Marie, what are those talents?
Okay, here's the secret. I'm a bowler. I bowl. I've been a bowler my whole life. Yep. Yeah, wow. We're talking real 10-pin bowling here. And I was the New Jersey state champion. Yep.
What?
Doubles. Yeah. Bowling.
Oh, sure. My.
Have you ever had a 300 game?
Never had a 300 game. Never.
How close?
289.
Yikes. That is amazing.
And I bowled that with a mother-son group we were doing. You know how they do the father-daughter dance? They were doing a mother-son bowling. And I was like, yeah, I'm in. So all the kids gathered around, and you have to picture all these 10 and 11 year old boys, and they're all there, and I'm bowling, and I have to get a strike for each one. So there was pressure, and they're like building up on the lane. So I got a strike, and I would point to one boy, and I'm like, okay, that's for you. And then the next one, I'd go get a strike for him. And so now there's this pressure, right? Because you can't let a kid down. Best game of my life.
Wow.
That's amazing.
So how old were you when you threw your first line at the bowling lane?
Yeah, so my mom and dad, they both worked for AT&T. So you have to picture back in the late 70s, we had tower computers on our dining room table and very tech savvy family. But they were in the bowling league, for the AT&T bowling league. And so I grew up as a little kid, like one of those little kids running around the bowling alley, and they would let us throw a couple of balls at the end of the night.
Oh, nice.
And my mother would take us on Saturday mornings, and we did like adult junior leagues. And then I was just doing junior leagues. And seriously, this was the hangout of my childhood, which tells you a lot more than you need to know. But yeah, so now I was bowling with my mom every Friday night. I would bowl with my mom if I could get back to New Jersey after work, until of course COVID shut that all down.
Yeah.
Never would have guessed that.
I know.
No? Well, it was either bowling or I was going to tell you about the Rubik's Cube. That's the other.
Well, you have to tell us now.
Nah, not really. No. About two summers ago, I learned how to do the Rubik's Cube. That was like my summer challenge. Last year's challenge, we did a 9,000 piece jigsaw puzzle. So this summer, I'm trying to learn how to speed cube, which is surprisingly more difficult if you've already learned how to solve the cube one way. So I'm kind of having to retrain my brain how to do speed cubing.
So if you're doing speed cubing, then the technique is different?
The technique is different. How you think about the cube, yeah. It's a different algorithm.
And how and where do you learn to do that?
Well, I've been using some YouTube videos to learn how to do it.
So what's your record time?
Right now, I can do it just under a minute.
You have a goal?
I would love to get faster than that.
That's a good goal.
That sounds like such a good goal.
Actually, right now, my goal is I'm training my 9-year-old daughter how to solve it. She's very dedicated.
Excellent.
Wow. We are awarding you, let's say, an all expense paid trip. No pandemic going on, so you can truly go anywhere in the world. Where will you be heading?
I would love to go out into the middle of the Pacific Ocean, as dark away from all the lights as possible, so that I could see the night sky with no light pollution, or at least as little as possible. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, final question. We're going to turn the clock back just a few clicks to the Marie Alcock in middle school. How would you describe this young woman?
Marie in middle school. Ugh, awkward. Transitioning. I mean, I was super transitioning. And Marie in middle school also had an older brother and two younger siblings, but I'm 10 and 12 years older than my siblings. And so in middle school, I was wrestling between being super responsible, right? Lots of jobs and responsibilities. I started working when I was 10. And then also like reckless, and I can't even believe I survived middle school. And it was really something growing up in White Plains, New York, because I could walk anywhere. And so I was really a free spirit. I was very independent as a middle schooler.
It sounds like a theme of all of these questions in just the time that we've known you is you're a person who always wants to do better, always wants to achieve more, always wants to learn new things. Would you say that those are true?
Yeah, that was really insightful, Brad. Thank you.
He may or may not have a background in this. He's amazing too.
You make me sound better.
No.
Hey,
no.
I could talk to you all day.
Well, Marie, we have a lovely gift for you today.
Yep.
And that is, we're going to grant you one wish for education. And no matter what you wish, it will come true within the next 10 years. What would be your choice?
In the field of education, just one wish. Well, I would say achieving equity in education. I think that my career has been a deep exploration of what education can mean and where our intentions are good. I just finished saying that if I were to interview teachers one-on-one, they're like, yes, I believe in educating every single child. And I believe in a liberal arts education. Every child should have exposure to everything, right? But we don't achieve it really well. We're not good at it yet. I think we believe in it. We desire it. But there are things about the industrial model that are designed to sort kids and make sure that not too many get an A, right? That we have in our system, even connecting it to, I was joking before a little bit about the fact that we connect it to property taxes, but I'm not joking. That's a problem. And so what it designs is this inequality by design. And I think people want to fight it, but don't even know where to start, or they perceive like the, we would love to do that, but they won't let us. I'd love to know who they are and get their names and their email addresses and find their office and have a sit-in, right? Because this behavior of ours in America, I'll just talk about the United States, the federal government keeps giving money, but that allows the states to not put so much money into it. But then you have to obey national rules that can't possibly apply across the whole country. So it's a bad habit. So I would love if you gave me this wish that we would kind of tear down those bad habits that are, can I call it just inequality by design? I'm so sorry, Jay McTighe. I just, please don't come after me. I respect you and love you. But it's this inequality in our structure. If you could get rid of that and allow us to really come back at it from this, let's educate at a local community, and but with the benefit, right, of all the brain science that we have from the 1990s, man, I would give my right arm to be in that system. That would be a gift.
Mm-hmm. Well, that will become true in the next 10 years.
Yeah. So. Woo-hoo! Yeah. Many thanks to you.
Add me and hello. Let's do it.
In the bio, we went over this amazing career trajectory that you have, but what we've been finding from our guests, all of which have these just rich professional histories that we love reading and learning about, finding that they too have heroes and mentors in the field or perhaps outside of the field that inspire them to be better. So has there been a hero or a mentor in your life? And if so, what about them inspires you?
Oh, I love this question. I really do, because I enjoy talking about the people who inspire me. The number one mentor for my career would be Heidi Hayes Jacobs. We have a funny story about how she became my mentor, but she talks about enjoying mentoring people. And so I went up to her and I was like, hey, can you mentor me? How do I grow up to be like you? And she's like, oh, well, first you need to go get your PhD and you need to go get international experience. And so I went off and got my PhD, and with People to People and with the American Education Research Association, I worked a lot and explored other countries in education. And so I went back to Heidi and I'm like, okay, now what do I do? And she's like, who are you? And it was really something. And I said, well, you told me to go get my PhD and get international experience. And so here I am, and here's what I've done. And she's like, no one does what I actually tell them to do. Sit down. And so a wonderful mentorship was born, and a wonderful friendship. We've co-authored books together now. We really push each other to be stronger and better at what we do. But I also have another mom in the industry, and that would be Benna Kallick. And Benna Kallick wrote Habits of Mind and gave me a great friendship with Art Costa. And so these are my two moms, right? So you got curriculum and then Habits of Mind. But from that bloomed all these friendships and wonderful mentorships. So Allison Zamuda, who's like queen of personalized learning, and Mike Fisher and I co-authored a book together. And Allison has co-authored a book with Benna, and now she's co-authoring a book with Heidi. And I've written chapters with Benna, and I've written books with Heidi. And so now there's this wonderful blooming group. And then you have people like Dr. Ann Johnson and Dr. Debbie Sullivan, who are the best administrators in some of the largest districts in our country. And they're just so generous. They're so generous, these amazing, brilliant people who take the time to sit and hear about what you're thinking about. So there's this group called the Learning Omnivores. And the Learning Omnivores meet together in a city where, let's say, there's a conference going on. So let's say there's a ASCD conference going on. And so we're like, all right, Learning Omnivores, go together. And we'll pay different consultants to just meet with us in a room for the weekend before or after the conference. And there are three things you present on: what you're currently presenting on, which is supposedly polished, what you're creating, which is what you're struggling with and building, and what are you learning? And that's like your raw questions that you're really. And so now it's like this network of mentors, right? It's this network of people who learn together. And so I'm actually currently on the hunt for even more mentors.
That's incredible.
Wow.
Usually we get a very simplistic answer to that question. somebody, but you have such a network of wonderful heroes.
They're amazing.
Makes me want to do that.
I knew it did. I knew your wheels were turning over there. He said, how am I going to get an invitation?
I'll tell you that as my career as an academic has grown, I am confronted with how little I know. And constantly moving into spaces where I surround myself with people smarter and more experienced than I am. And that's the only place I feel comfortable now as I develop things, because of the limitations on what we think we know.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of our recent guests was Yang Zhao.
Oh, superhero.
Yeah. One of the things he said to us was, if there's something you want to learn about, write a book about it, because there's no better way to learn than that.
Oh, Bennett Kallick says writing is the thinking process. But Yang Zhao, he wrote the book Catching Up or Leading the Way, which I loved the inspiration of challenging this low morale, right, that American teachers have right now about what they do. And he brought forward this idea of, please stop trying to chase what other countries are doing. Certainly learn from them, but don't give up what we do so well. And I've quoted him on that. But I met with the Minister of Education of China when I was there. And one thing he said was, if he could get away from testing, he would. He has 5,000 years of history with testing. He can't get away from it. He has to sort. But the United States, we don't have to. So he encouraged us to abandon that. And I wish we would take Yang Zhao's and the Minister of Education's advice.
One of your many ventures is CES Links. So could you tell us about how that contributes to unifying data and decision-making?
Oh, for sure. And thank you for letting me talk about it. Links is an idea that was born from my 25 years in the education industry. And one of the elements, the frustration pieces I run into is how disconnected the systems in education are. Either they were built by other industries and then repurposed for education, or they were built with one specific perspective, let's say teacher facing, right, or administrative facing, and can't change. They're not agile enough to adjust to contemporary needs. And they're also wildly expensive. So CES is a comprehensive education system, one that's designed for education and one that's designed to be student facing. This is one of those opportunities where being last to the table is an advantage, right? So all those systems, right? They were built like one box systems. So for them to change something, they need like a 7-year timeline. So I want you to think of this as like the Netflix of education systems. You don't need training on it. It's incredibly intuitive, and it can bring in features that are needed quickly and efficiently. So it's more effective, it's more efficient, and it's actually affordable. So that's what Lynx is. It's a comprehensive education system. It's student-centered. It has seven different interfaces: the student, the parent, the teacher, administrators, and then it has greater community, so like colleges or fire inspection, right? Like all those other people who, right? You with me on this? Mm-hmm. And then like the state or Providence or any larger group data source, and then public, general public. So those seven interfaces are all connected. So when you put in a child's name, it fills in all the variables.
Wow.
And that's what it is, Lynx.
Incredible.
It's unbelievable, but it saves time, right? As a consultant, I would be working with teachers on like curriculum mapping or something. They'd have to log into one database to get their curriculum, one database to get their assessments, another database to get their student information, a different database to actually put it into a learning management system. And then they'd have to put in a different database to submit, let's say, like special ed reports to the state. How many passwords? And how much are they paying per database? That shocked me. So I was like, all right, well, let's go solve this. And I went to go talk to different companies and they're like, we are doing that, but give us 7 years. Or we are doing that, but we're going to charge the schools separately for each upgrade. So that's a huge equity issue for me. So that's what inspired me to design and build CES Lynx.
Well, hey, it's been such a joy talking with Marie, but this is not the end. We're going to be back next week with part two. So join us then.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.